and welcome to Como Explained. It's the new podcast from the KBIA newsroom that takes some of the big news stories that affect our community and breaks them down. I'm Scott Pham, the digital content director here at KBIA. My co-host is Ryan Femuliner, assistant director of the newsroom. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Scott. You know, it's a nice week. We finally have some nice weather outside. I'm enjoying it.
That's nice. That's nice for you to answer that sarcastically for once.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, yeah. I'm doing well.
Good. Good. Glad to hear it. Today, we are talking about the legislature. And the news here, the news peg here, is that the legislative session has ended. And right now, we got a whole bunch of bills out there, most of which have not been signed. So we're going to talk about what are the bills that we have on the table, which ones are going to get signed, and what's going to happen to them.
Right. And that's what we talked about this week on Intersection as well. We had legislators on kind of doing a wrap-up of the session. So that's a good hour-long thing worth listening to if you want to hear from our local reps. We had Senator Kurt Schaefer, Representative Chris Kelly, and Representative Caleb Browden all on the show. And it was really interesting to hear from them. We did get them some not always candid remarks because they are politicians, but some candid remarks on a few different issues. Sometimes they were tougher eggs to crack. But that was a really productive show. But I think today what we wanted to kind of take a look at is something that was kind of one of the presumptions we made throughout the show on Intersection was talking about this veto-proof majority.
Right. It's a very different kind of legislature we have right now. We got Republican majorities in the House and in the Senate, and it's been that way for more than 10 years, actually. But what's different this time versus any other time before is that now we have veto-proof majority. So what is that, Ryan?
So a veto-proof majority is really what it sounds like, right? The governor has the ability to either sign or veto a law after it passes through the legislature. I feel like I'm going through Schoolhouse Rock right now.
That's what we do. That's what the point of the show is.
But so the veto-proof majority means that there is a legislative function where when they send the bill to the governor and he decides to veto it, there is a session in September of every year where the legislators come back and are able to look at what was vetoed, and if they're able to bring up enough votes, are able to override the governor's veto and make it law. That's basically to keep the governor in check so he doesn't have too much power so that laws can still get passed.
Right, and it's really hard to override a veto. So usually this doesn't happen very often.
Right. It's a two-thirds majority vote. So at the moment, that means 109 votes at the state house and 23 votes at the state house. So at the moment, that Republicans have one more than that in each place. They have 110 members in the House and 24 in the Senate.
So if they caucus right and if they vote as a block, they are able to pass every bill with a veto-proof majority with one to spare.
If they vote as a block, which is a pretty big qualifier, right? Yeah. And we'll talk more about that. But yes, theoretically, if there's something that is strictly going to fall on party lines, Republicans can get it passed without even one Democrat agreeing, including the governor being a Democrat at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this was the first time it's happened in when was the last time it happened? The AP, they said that the last time this happened was in the 1980s when the Democrats were actually dominant in the state legislature.
Right. Democrats had a veto-proof majority, and there was a Republican governor.
Yeah. So that must have been a pretty wacky time.
Yeah. So we've got I think there was maybe historically a Republican – or there was – actually, there was never a veto-proof majority Republican until now. There was – looking back at this AP story, there was – Republicans held a higher percentage of seats in the House, but it wasn't really – it wasn't actually a veto-proof majority.
They had that higher percentage in the Civil War.
Right. Yeah.
It was just a toy government back then.
Yeah. Records are a little spotty. Things weren't as entrenched along party lines probably back then. I don't know. I'm not going to try to analyze Civil War era politics today on the show. Right. But regardless, this is relatively unprecedented for the Republican Party to have this sort of – they'd been close to a veto-proof majority the last couple of years. So if they could get a couple Democrats over, they could still override a veto. But now, again, if they vote as a block, it's something that can easily happen in September. Again, there's kind of this function where the governor can veto the bill. The other thing the governor can do is not sign the bill, and then it still goes into law. He has to either veto, sign, or not sign is kind of third cop-out option, if you will.
And he does that a lot because there's a lot of bills that he knows he can't or won't veto, but they are just so part of the Republican platform. He doesn't want to have his name on it.
Right. Doesn't want to have his name on it. It may get overridden. The veto may get overridden anyway. Or there's a number of reasons why he may do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about this for journalists and for like political scientist types and observer types of the legislature is it's kind of a weird experiment, right? We've never seen this before. And this is kind of a way to see like, you know, this is the – This kind of eventuality, there is a place for it in the law, and there are rules for what happens when we get this kind of majority, but we just never see it. So now what happens? That's the question we want to answer. What happens when you have this super high majority that's veto-proof?
Right. And so do we want to talk about what happened this year, I guess?
Yeah let's do it.
Because we do have to – I mean, we have an example, right? We don't have to hypothesize because we saw a year of it or a session of it, rather, about 5 months. So what happened was I guess the easy one, the obvious one, had to do a lot. There were many, many gun control issues that came up in this legislative session. One of them that's pretty obvious to talk about is we talked about on Intersection as well is House Bill 436 that had to do with basically making new federal gun laws that would infringe on people's gun rights unenforceable in the state.
Right. No, and this came out of a lot of fear that happened after the shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, and then after Obama came and said, we're going to make this part of our federal agenda. That's when the state legislature came together and said, we're going to not enforce any laws that you may or may not pass before they even really attempted to pass them.
Right. And it seems pretty obvious. You know, we had – two of the three people we had on there had law backgrounds on the show on Intersection, and both of them basically said, yeah, this is not going to hold up constitutionally.
It's just simply unconstitutional. Yeah. Just to be clear, it is in the Constitution that federal law trumps state law. It's part of how government works.
Right. And that was one of Chris Kelly. We didn't quite get there on the show, but he's been quoted as saying, you know, that path leads to secession, right? That's what that path leads to, which, you know, at some points in debate, it seemed like that was the case in Missouri this year. But that's talking about one thing that got passed. But there were a number of other gun laws as well, some things that were more practical, some things that you know, people on both sides, some Democrats actually would probably vote for things about education and things like that. But there were a few other things attached to those gun laws, some things that it lowered the concealed carry age from 21 to 19, and a few other smaller measures like that basically enhanced gun rights rather than limited them.
Also expanded the places where you can have guns. Basically allowed you to have guns in the parking lots of government buildings, in the parking lots of private business owners, that kind of thing. And these have actually been on the NRA wish list explicitly for a little while now. I guess they just kind of saw that this was the time to do it. You know, it's kind of funny, though, that like some of these laws, like you said, are the kind of laws that don't seem very radical, lowering ages and expanding gun rights in parking lots and such. Those are the kind of things that you would expect to see, you know, last year when there was a strong Republican majority. You might even see that law that says we won't respect federal law, HB 436, we won't respect federal gun law. You might even see that in last year's legislature, but it would just be a joke. It would be a big
It just wouldn't get through, right?
Right.
It would be unlikely. Now, that said, there was still just a few votes different, but it kind of changes the syntax of things when you know that you know, it's never going to be able to come to a veto session or anything
This came through. That's what's so that's so crazy to me. You know, I actually lost – I heard about this law and I just assumed it was a joke and I kind of lost track of it for a little while.
Well, because there were a few joke laws related. There was one that I can't remember the name of the legislator that introduced at the beginning of the session, but it said that anybody that even introduces something at the state level that infringes gun rights would be a felony.
Right. So they're talking about arresting state legislators on the floor of the Capitol. That's what they are suggesting.
Right. And that was a joke. Basically, the sponsor said, yeah, this is a joke.
That was a stunt.
But also said, I'm making a point. Yeah, exactly. It was a stunt. It wasn't completely just a joke. And it probably in that person's mind, it also was, you know, hey, we're making a statement. This is where the legislature is going this year. And it just happened to be the topic du jour this year because, as you mentioned, we've had a couple really horrific incidents across the country that have kind of sparked this debate on the national level. And so Missouri, you know, Caleb Rowden on the show on Intersection basically said, you know, we know Missouri are worried about you know, about their right to bear arms, and we want to show them that we are thinking about that. He said we may not have gone the right way about it. Maybe not, but regardless, we want people to know that we're going to defend your Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, no, and there's something very telling about what he said there, because, you know, every near the end of every session, every legislator is thinking like, well, what can I tell my constituents in my district that I have done for them? What is the narrative of my year here? And, you know, legislators have to do all kinds of procedural stuff. They got to shift money, small amounts here and there. Lots of really boring things that they can't always bring to their constituents and say, this is what I did for you. And of all the things they've done, which maybe admittedly isn't that much, but of all the things they've done, Kayla were out and pointed out that HB 436, that gun law that would reject federal authority, that was what he thought is the feather in his cap. And I feel like a lot of other legislators are using that too.
Yeah. The other thing that was another feather in his cap we can mention as well was the tax cuts that the Republicans pushed through, basically, that would lower the income tax. It's kind of this ongoing thing with states in the Midwest and across the country where they keep lowering tax rates to try to increase business in different areas. There's a big fight going on in the Kansas City area. It's an amazing story. If you're not familiar with it, look it up, where companies are jumping back and forth between Kansas City and Missouri based on what kind of incentives they can get in each state. And so it kind of comes out of that idea. That was one of the first things that Rowden mentioned as well on the show. But then both Schaefer and Kelly pointed out that's one thing that the governor's very likely to veto. He's been pretty clear about
right.
that.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and let's break it down. The first is that the Missouri budget is pretty small, and we rely on a lot of federal money just to keep the state going. You know, we're 0.5% of our income tax is actually a huge, huge amount.
Yeah, and it would phase down over the course of 10 years. But yeah, there's been estimates around $700 million or something like that, which is a significant chunk of the state budget.
Yeah. You got to think about it, like, we are constantly having fights over amounts between $50 and $100 million, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the amount of that's the amount of money that may make or break a hospital, or may make or break the university system.
Right, right. So, and so that's not a small chunk, $700 million. And so that's why the governor has threatened to veto that. And so it seems fairly likely that's going to happen. And maybe we'll talk more here in a second. I guess the other thing to talk about what happened this year is, you know, there was also just a lot of other debate going on. Governor Nixon qualified it as distractions. There was something he mentioned in his press conference immediately after the session ended. He mentioned, you know, instead of passing Medicaid expansion, we talked about Sharia law and we talked about Agenda 21. So
SB 265 is a bill that was passed by the Senate and the House that would basically prevent Agent 21.
Agenda 21.
Agenda 21. It's a fictional thing to begin
with. Well, it's not a fictional thing, but it sounds like science fiction. How about that? It sounds like,
it's going to block Galactica 21 from being implemented in Missouri. And there's another SB 267, which is kind of the companion law that would actually block Sharia law. I don't know what's more likely, actually. But basically, these bills are preventing application in some future of these two things. So, right. do you want to try to explain what Agenda 21 is, or should I?
How about this? I'll try to start, and you can help me out. Yeah. So, Agenda 21 is this like non-binding thing that the UN put out years ago. I want to say in the 90s,
during International Environmental Conference.
It was kind of like this bullet list of different ideas on how to be, I guess, more green and that type of idea across the world. Again, non-binding. And the UN, of course, any measures they put out wouldn't have any sort of, you know, hold in the U.S. anyway, right? They can't really create rules that have to take place in the United States or in Missouri. But regardless, this has also been something that that specifically conservatives seem to talk a lot about. You'll hear talks about black helicopters and different conspiracy theorist type ideas.
I don't totally understand what the helicopters.
The black black helicopters refer to whenever there's some sort of traumatic event or something like that, all of a sudden black helicopters show up and federal agents are there or something like that. It definitely fits into a conspiracy theorist view. But I mean, I've heard, there were legislators this year quoted saying, it was debate on the floor talking about black helicopters, saying these things exist. This is a big deal. We need to vote for this. And they did vote for it. This is something that was passed. Now, it also, you know, there are a lot of some other talks about, you know, use of your private land under eminent domain, things like that. Basically, the idea is any sort of government infringement on whatever rights you have as an American. And they believe that both of these categories of things, Agenda 21, Sharia law, are things that might infringe on your rights as an American. And so that it kind of fits into the same thing with the federal gun law thing. They are kind of preventative things, trying to say, look, we think the federal government or somebody's going to try to impose something, and we want to be preventative about it and saying that this is not something that will let fly in Missouri. Now, does that hold up federally, or does it actually have any real – like the Agenda 21, again, has very little actual binding because a UN thing wouldn't come down to Missouri.
It's one of those
anyway,
things where I wonder, maybe the governor should just sign it, right? It's not like anybody's going to come and say, let's do this Agenda 21 thing. You know, it's not on the table. At no point has somebody proposed Agenda 21.
He might just not sign it. He might just not veto it.
He might just let it go in because it's not going to have an effect on anything.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he definitely criticized it. I feel like maybe he would veto it just for the sake of it. But it's hard to know for sure exactly how he's going to handle some of those types of things that came through that, you know, aren't like the state budget that he really has to sign to take place. This is not something that
– things that have no effect
on anything.
To be
frank, doesn't really affect anything until – you know, unless these things came into place at some point in this amazing future, right?
I think the root cause of this is – did you hear about this? That there was a sci-fi novel.
Okay.
Written by Glenn Beck.
Oh, really?
Agenda 21.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah, see, look, I'm looking it up. I can show it to you my phone right now.
On your intelligent phone. Oh, there you go.
It's a real book.
Wow, $17.95 on it. That's a pretty high price for Amazon.com,
actually. It's kind of high, but you can get free Super Saver shipping.
Oh, okay.
You pack it with something
else. All right, so that's like, you know, saving $4 on shipping, so it's really like $13. That's not bad.
Yeah. Buy it at our Amazon store on our website.
So we better get a kickback for this.
We don't have that.
All right, so... But no, so we've got a lot of these things that this debate that takes up a lot of time that maybe you wouldn't usually see in something that wasn't so strongly controlled by one side.
Right. So yeah, this is why when you have the ability to kind of move into these very kind of base heavy topics, the kind of things that you're basically really concerned with. This is what the experiment tells us. So you pass a lot of laws about things that haven't happened yet.
You know? Well, and it kind of fits into, I mean, I don't want to put my analyst hat on here, but, you know, there's a lot of people on the Republican side right now that, you know, also fit into some sort of like libertarian ideas at the moment. So from their sense, if nothing got passed this session, that might be a good session, right? Think about Ron Swanson. You know, he on Parks and Rec, if you watch that show, he loves it when nothing happens in his government, in his local government. So so there was, you know, there are a few things to hang that Republicans are hanging their hats on that actually got passed. But I feel like a lot of times, you know, things like this, even things that did get passed, are really trying to prevent something else from happening. You know, there were still some essential things that got passed. The second injury fund was an important thing. This basically insolvent fund that still got passed with bipartisan support. There were still some essential things. It's not like nothing happened. It's not like the government's going to fold because
this is the free time stuff. They did their work, most of it, and this is what they did in their free time.
Yeah, this was the free time stuff, but it was also the, you know, Governor Nixon would say it was also the avoid the big task that's ahead of you stuff as well. Avoid talking about Medicaid expansion and getting something done there. Put it off till next session because it probably will come up against next session as well. And that's one of his huge disappointments, I would say, you know, and something that, you know, that was the big thing for him this year for the governor was getting that passed. And it just never materialized, really got close.
And the last thing we should mention, too, is that it sounds a little procedural. It sounds not very interesting, but they got the DMV out of the concealed carry permitting system. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like not that big of a deal, but it of course has to do with the whole controversy around the concealed carry around the DMV and the concealed carry, which we covered before in a previous show.
Yeah, refer to our previous show for that analysis. But basically, I mean, the one thing that did come out of that that was pretty interesting was that the Department of Motor Vehicles also only has 8 months of funding at the moment.
Right.
Until basically Senator Schaefer was on the show yesterday or this week talking about, you know, they'll come back in January and decide whether or not to give the DMV that extra 4 months of funding, which that actually is one of those. I was talking about the essential things. That's obviously a pretty essential function of government.
To fund a department.
To fund a Department of Motor Vehicles.
And here they did not.
I think people are pretty happy with DMV performance anyway, right? People love going to the DMV and waiting in line, so it's not going to be a big deal if they have to wait in line a little longer. The governor did threaten some layoffs because of that, but it's yet to be seen whether that happens or whether he just says, okay, we'll pretend like nothing happened and assume that things are going to be realistic when they come back and actually fund them for the next 4 months.
Right. So, so the two sides of that argument is that the Republicans are saying, like, we have no intention of defunding the DMV. That's what it looks like on paper, but we fully intend to give them that extra money.
If they cooperate with our investigation and stop doing the things we don't want them to do.
Yeah. And then what Nixon is saying is, I asked for X dollars. You gave me X minus 4 months. I'm going to treat this as if I'm never getting that money. I'm going to start laying off people.
Right, right. So it's yet to be seen what actually happens. You know, a lot of this is posturing and everything.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's happening here. I think it's posturing. I think it's the Republicans showing that they have the ability to really kind of boss around these parts of government that are usually pretty tightly controlled under the executive branch. All this kind of kicked off with Senator Schaefer, our representative in this district, basically taking the DMV to task in some Senate hearings, kicking off this whole controversy that wound up with the DMV director getting
Or Department of Revenue.
Department of Revenue. That's the parent department.
Yeah.
Department of Revenue director or secretary rather getting kicked out.
Let's be careful. He resigned, officially resigned.
Yes, he resigned with a hurry. Resigned in a hurry, that guy did, Brian Long. And then of course, all these laws to kind of get them out of the business of concealed carry. So
we probably should move on. We had this great idea, right, of after going through this conversation that we would say, okay, now what's going to happen with some of these big things? Is the governor going to veto them or not? And what happens with this veto-proof majority? We're like, hey, let's do this. Let's research it and talk about it. And then I looked and our friend Jason Rosenbaum at the St. Louis Beacon went and already did this story. Damn it.
Okay, we're going to pull it out. You don't hide the papers. It's there. They know it is.
All right. So Jason Rosenbaum, thank you very much for letting us talk about your stuff, even though we didn't ask for permission. But anyway, he picked a few. And well, I think he highlighted some of the very interesting ones. One we already talked about are those tax cuts that are going to take place. So he gave these different ratings on whether he thought Nixon would veto these and whether or not the bill would then get overridden in that veto session in September. Again, this is something that happens every year because it could happen without this veto-proof majority. It could happen with Republicans and Democrats both deciding to come together and turn something over. But so these tax cuts we talked about earlier in the show, Rosenbaum, basically his qualifications that the chances are very high that Nixon is going to veto those.
I think he's basically said as much.
Yeah. Yeah. He has said as much. He has serious concerns about the legislation is what he said in a press conference. He called it a reckless Washington style gimmick. And so it seems pretty very likely. And this is, again, both Senator Schaefer and Representative Kelly both thought this was the case as well. But then the chances that this bill is going to get overridden in September, he put that as unclear.
Right, and that's because we had if you look at how it passed in the Senate and the House, it passed with 24 votes in the Senate, which would be enough to override the veto. But in the House, they were six short.
103 votes.
Yeah. You need 109 to override a veto. They got 103 in the House. But that doesn't mean they can't pick up those votes.
Right. And there also were 9 state representatives, including 7 Republicans, that didn't vote on the bill. So if all those Republicans came in and added the 103, you would actually have that 110 that you need. Now, we don't have that as proof. So it's not really clear. Potentially, you could pick up some Democrats, but also it's tough to be that 109th vote, right? And so so there's a chance that, you know, maybe even Republicans can be swayed on something like this. But yeah, so unclear on that one. It wasn't a clear veto-proof majority, but it could happen. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the governor does, because that's one that actually has a huge impact on the state budget in the coming years.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
All right. So you want to move on to another one?
Yeah. So one law that the Republicans passed this session is what some people are calling a right to work bill.
Or it's kind of like a precursor to right to work. It's not full-on right to work, but it's meant to be kind of this like halfway right to work, still putting pressure on unions.
So the way it works now is if you're a worker in a union shop and the majority of those workers have voted to be in a union, then the dues for being in that union come out of your paycheck automatically. So it sounds like kind of a procedural question, but basically the bill that was passed by the state legislature says that now you have to be asked each time if you want that money to come out of your paycheck.
Sure. And so it doesn't actually specifically legislatively say what unions can and can't do, but it does basically cripple what they're able to do as a body and change it. It would be a bit of a game changer in what could happen and the abilities they have in basically forcing people to be members of unions at the moment. So Nixon, the chances that he vetoes that bill, our friend Jason Rosenbaum at the St. Louis Beacon said that it's very high.
It's hard to imagine how he could get away with allowing this to pass, given that he, like most Democrats at that level, have a lot of support from unions.
Right. And so there's been he's unlikely to sign this kind of legislation. He's very close to labor unions. Senate President Pro Tem Tom Dempsey is quoted as saying in Jason Rosenbaum's article here, "I would guess that the Paycheck Protection Bill would be something Governor Nixon's not going to sign." And Governor Nixon did say in his post-press conference, hey, you know what, the veto session's not going to be just fun events like it usually is. They're going to have some work to do. So this seems like one of those that's pretty likely to be some of that work he's going to be giving them.
Usually fun events? I think
there's ice cream socials, yeah. If you go to the Capitol at any – actually, almost every day is an ice cream social at the Capitol if you walk around. If you come outside, there's like free barbecue outside or whatever. So
really?
I mean, not every day. But there's a lot of fun stuff always going on the Capitol lawn. During session especially. But
I've only been once. I just saw a bunch of people passing out brochures.
Oh, that happens too, of course. There's a march on the Capitol every other day. I hate to say that. Yeah. But okay, so a very high chance that Nixon vetoes the bill. But then our friend Jason Rosenbaum says that he thinks there's a low probability that the legislature is then going to override this veto. And that's based on pretty good logic because it did get the support of the Senate, 24 Republicans, all 24 Republicans, which would be enough in the Senate, but it was not even really close in the House. The vote was 85-69, and again, they needed 109 votes in favor to override it. So there would need to be a sea change in the way the House treated this bill when it came through for it to be overridden in September.
Okay, let's look at these gun laws real quick.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about them earlier in the show, but Representative Douglas Funderburk is the one that sponsored some of this big legislation. The House Bill 436 that we talked about earlier, specifically that Representative Chris Kelly was saying, look, this is like couldn't be more clear that this is unconstitutional, wouldn't hold up in a federal court. Attorney would ever try to prosecute somebody under this. It just would not hold up. It'd be a huge waste of time. The one that is going to basically say that federal laws are not going to be able to be new federal laws are not going to be able to be imposed in the state.
I call that the screw you feds law.
The screw you feds law. That's not a bad generalization about what this is.
That's what I wrote in my notes.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And so Nixon's chances that he vetoes this, Jason Rosenbaum puts that at moderately high.
So weird that it's moderately high. It seems like there's a sliver of a chance he would pass like a patently unconstitutional law.
Yeah. So he said last Friday, he said he'll obviously give the bill a very careful review. And of course, that would include the very real legal issues of attempting to nullify federal laws. He did say before that, saying he hadn't got a chance to try to read it yet. And that it seemed like during the discussion, people were saying extreme things on each side, which we heard from Chris Kelly as well. He basically said, like, when we start talking about guns, people just lose their minds on both sides. They both don't find any middle ground and things get insane.
Yeah.
To me, it seems pretty likely that the governor's going to veto this. If I was going to put on my analyst hat, but you know, what do I know? I'm not a governor or an aide. So, but it seems like, like you said, for the constitutional issues alone, he'd have a pretty good justification for vetoing it. Like, look, this is clearly not something we wouldn't want the attorney general or somebody in the state to get mixed up in a lawsuit over this when we know that it isn't going to work, right? But then, of course, the chance that it gets vetoed or that it gets overridden by the state legislature, Jason Rosenbaum puts that at very high.
Yeah,
moderately high. Moderately high. Because it was a very popular bill. Republicans may decide, as he says, not to pursue an override.
Because it's basically a joke bill.
I don't think it's a joke
bill. No, it's not a joke
bill. It's a making a point bill.
It looks a lot like you're right. Okay, yeah. Well, it has a lot of the characteristics of a stunt. And it might be that it's not worth it to pursue a veto override when they feel they've already made their point.
Right. But the bill did pass each chamber with a veto-proof majority. So if they wanted to, most likely they could be able to hold that block together and make this law.
Yeah. So that's the year.
Yeah.
That's the year in law.
Yeah. And that's not all, of course. There are many, many other issues the governor could veto. We can't talk about all of them. Those are kind of the big ones. Thank you, Jason Rosenbaum, for highlighting and doing all of our research for you and giving me
the last
afternoon.
20 minutes over. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, one thing that I wanted to do at the end here was is try to break down what the narrative of the year was. On the Democratic side, on Nixon's side, right, he came in with this agenda, which was basically just Medicaid expansion. That was the main thing he wanted to get done. It didn't seem like he cared about too much else. And that was barely picked up. It was barely considered. They spent a lot of time doing things that were not that. So for the Democrats, the narrative that they want to give about this session was it was 5 months of screwing around, doing things to please your base, and not looking at the big elephant in the room, which is Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, that's definitely what the governor, how he characterized it in his press conference right after the session was, hey, we wasted time on Agenda 21 when we were not talking about Medicaid expansion.
And so what are Republicans telling their constituents?
So Republicans said, man, you guys are really glad that you elected a veto-proof majority. This went so well this session. And that's literally what – basically, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what Tim Jones said after the session ended, the House Speaker. They feel like they got a lot of their things done, and I think the Medicaid expansion not going through was probably a victory for them.
Yeah.
Because it's what the Democrats wanted. It's something they didn't want. So the fact that they got through the session and relatively unscathed on that issue seems like a victory for them. So I think it's just a little bit of both, but it's also just getting some of the things passed that they wanted to get passed and not having to mess with some of the other stuff.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to the constituents saying, we protected your liberties. We are keeping you free, and one of those things they're keeping you free from is Medicaid.
Right. And we didn't run the place in the ground necessarily either, right? Because you know, that was the other thing that Senator Schaefer said, you know, the budget was passed, and like a budget didn't get passed. The budget got passed. Mostly everything is funded as it used to be, a few cuts here and there. The motor vehicles thing, actually an increase in funding for education. Now we'll see how that holds up when the governor does his withholdings and stuff to try to actually make the budget work in the real world. But you know, they basically saying, like, look, this year happened. There's not going to be a ton of notable stuff on the Republican side that they can point to unless this tax cut stays. If this tax cut stays, that'll be something they point to for years and say, look what the legislature did in 2013. But there doesn't appear to be a lot of other things that are going to be lasting reform or lasting change. But I don't know that we expected that from a Republican legislature anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's going to do it for Como Explained. I'm going to remind you that this is our sixth episode. And you know what happens next time?
Next time it's real, guys.
Next time it's real. We've been doing this thing for over a month. And every time we finish a show, Ryan goes, hey, this is almost a real thing.
Yeah, this is almost a real thing. And I picked this arbitrary number of 7. I'm not sure why.
I think it used to be 5. And then you revised it up to 7.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's why you're saying it right now. So I can't keep pushing the number up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's on the record. So right. Next week, real episode. It's a real show. And it exists. And you can listen to it. So another thing I want to remind you is that the way we do this is that we want our podcast to last a long time and be useful and helpful to you if you're following the issues. So we've got a bunch of good podcasts still out there on topics that are still relevant even now. We did an episode on the DMV concealed carry controversy. That is still something that people are talking about. And if you want to get an idea of like why that stuff happened in the legislature this time around, go back and listen to that. We think it makes a lot of sense. We did an episode on downtown zoning to try to explain why downtown is built the way it is. We think that's still something that can be helpful to you now. So check that out. You check it on iTunes Store, and where you can also subscribe and leave us a comment if you are so inclined. As always, find us on kbia.org. Tweet us at KBIA and send us emails to news@kbia.org. All right, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.
Bye.